Welcome to Authors on Tour Live, a podcast for people who love to hear about books from the authors themselves.
We're at the Author Studio at Book Expo America 2011 in New York City, and right now we have the pleasure of sitting with Duff McKagan, and he's just written a book called It's So Easy and Other Lies. You know the name Duff McKagan. He is a founding member of Guns N' Roses as well as Velvet Revolver. He is the father of two. He is a soothsayer. He is an amazing guy. He is an ESPN columnist. I'm just going by all those things you told me, Duff.
Yeah, thanks.
You've done so much with your life. You decided to write a memoir. I would imagine it's not just for cathartic reasons, but it's because you want to tell everybody what you've gone through and what you've enjoyed and what you haven't enjoyed so much, yes?
Well, you know, I don't know if I had a burning desire to write a memoir as much as the words just started to pour out. I got in a groove 3 years ago when I started writing for the Seattle Weekly, a weekly column, and I really found that I could express things in my life much clearer in the written word. I could be funnier than I probably am. The observations I was making about things, whatever, mountain climbing or me riding a Harley Davidson and thinking, I live with three women, my wife and two. So I have to have something. So I have this, you know, I have bikes. And I think I'm kind of a badass on my bike. But then I get a call on my phone. My wife wants me to get a half gallon of milk on the way home. And I got the half gallon of milk. And so in writing these columns, I started to reflect on my own life. And when you write a sentence, you have to write another sentence after it. And another sentence after that. And I started to see, I think we look in the rearview mirror of our lives and go, we don't mean to do it, but wherever you had bumps in your life, it was that guy's fault, especially in like cases like mine where there was a lot of people involved. It was always that guy's fault or that guy or whatever. And I started to see actually my part in things. Very interesting. I had a long bout with drinking and drugs. People would ask me, how much did you do? And I would say a number. But to a normal person who has never been through that, it's just if I say a gallon of vodka a day or what, it really will mean nothing to that person. I go, that sounds like a lot. So I started to experiment with narrative, taking you through that, taking myself down that rabbit hole. How did a guy who was a 14-year-old kid who had really everything in front of him, playing music, starting to play music. How did I get from 14 to at 28 wanting to die? Just wanting it to be over. How do you get from that point to that point? And then how did I get out of it? So it's a story of rock and roll. It's a personal story. Kind of covers a lot, and the coming out of it really for me was to write that was a kind of a beautiful experience, because I got to relive me getting my life back again. And
before we talk about specific stories about growing up in Seattle, etc., tell me how you came up with the title of the book, It's So Easy and Other Lies.
Well, I wrote a song. It was one of the first Guns N' Roses song. It was called It's So Easy. Now, in the song, I'm going through life and everything's just falling into place. It's so easy. Everything's dropping in my lap. Or Axel sang the song. Axel and I actually, it was a duet. So it was like this kind of young man's war cry, you know? Streets of Hollywood and dirty and grimy, but you overcome it all. How did I come up with the title? I don't know. We experimented with a lot of titles, and I was at the gym one day, and It's So Easy and Other Lies, because it really wasn't. And it was kind of part of me getting honest with myself. That, you know, I found out for a while there in my 20s, yeah, I was lying to myself, because I was so addicted. and you make up excuses. Little white lies turn into, that's really how it happened. You know, you convince yourself.
Let's talk about Seattle. Let's talk about growing up. So many rockers of your generation grew up in Seattle. You grew up...
Do you want to talk about the Sonics?
I'll talk about whatever you want to talk about. I was gonna bring up the fact that you were raised by a single mom and you were into music at a very early age. I mean, whatever you want to talk about is fine.
Yeah, growing up in Seattle. Great family. Youngest of eight kids. It's an honor to have my seven brothers, older brothers and sisters, and grow up under their tutelage. And my mother was really a lion of a woman. And she raised us right. She was a product of the Depression. She had me when she was 40. So my parents were much older than me. My oldest brothers and sisters are 20 years older than me, old enough to be my parents. So this generational thing, I learned Depression-era values, which is kind of crazy for a kid growing up in the 70s. But I didn't know the difference. And we lived a wonderfully happy life. It was, looking back, of course, we scraped by. But when you're a kid, you don't know you're scraping by. And my mom never showed the stress that I'm sure she was under.
Did she encourage your music? And did the brothers and sisters encourage it as well?
Yes. So I had older brothers and sisters that played music. So there was guitars around the house. There was a drum kit. And so I really grew up playing drums, bass, and guitar. My mother encouraged whatever made me happy, I think. She definitely didn't discourage. I discouraged what I was doing. I left school, high school as a sophomore, and enrolled in a alternative school where you didn't have to go to school every day. And I started touring, started playing a bunch of gigs outside of Seattle, and that eventually. There was an influx of heroin into Seattle in about 1982, and it started really decimating my peer group. And I was at 19. It was that jump off point. Either stay here and just work a regular job and somehow play music. But my band members, everybody around me, it seemed, was strung out on heroin. So it was that thing. Like one day I went, okay, I'm going to go to New York or Los Angeles. My car was pretty sure it wouldn't make it to New York. So that was the deciding thing, where my car could go.
Did you feel you needed to get away from Seattle because of what was going on amongst your peer group, or because you felt you needed to get out of Seattle to make it in the music business? Or both?
Both of those things. It was just one of those crazy snap judgments that I acted on.
That 19-year-olds make.
And I had $360 put in my notice at my job, and headed south, and stopped in San Francisco, and I lived in a squat in the Mission for 2 weeks. And I had a bunch of friends in San Francisco, all these punk rock guys, and we basically partied. And I didn't mean to stay there for 2 weeks, but 300 of my $360 got spent in that 2 weeks. And I landed in L.A., got a job. I had a good resume as a cook. I got a job on my way into Seattle, into Los Angeles, I'm sorry. Started work that day. At a Black Angus cooking, and took it from there.
The story of Guns N' Roses and how you guys got together, you and Slash and Axl and the rest of the guys, is well documented.
Yes.
I'm wondering, in the book, is there anything we learned new from you about the formation of the band and what you went through in the early years?
I'm sure there's a lot. I've done a ton of interviews, but I don't really, you know, so many people ask me about the formation of Guns N' Roses or anything about Guns N' Roses. And I think what I've probably done over the last 20 years is kind of skip over it really quick and get to whatever I'm doing that point. Let's talk about this band, Velvet Revolver or Loaded or whatever I'm doing. in writing about it, yeah, I found out some things about myself, and it changed my story. The story that I'd stuck with this whole time sort of changed, and there's some deeper thought in it. And now, of course, I'm an adult. I'm a grown man. Looking back, we were kids. And we made kid-like decisions a lot. We didn't know. You know, when you're a musician and then all of a sudden some success comes, and then larger success, and you don't know what a royalty check is or what's ASCAP. You know, how are we supposed to know? So we went through this thing sort of like threatening CPAs, where do you live? Because if we find out we're getting ripped off, we'll burn your house down. Those types of things. We were tough guys. We were serious guys. Music was the most important thing to us as a band. We rehearsed twice a day. We lived together. We learned how to write good songs together, songs that meant something to us. We weren't writing for the general public. We weren't writing hit pop singles. We didn't know how to do that. We weren't interested in that. We were writing songs that reflected our experience, collective experience. And it's kind of, you know, you look back at some of the songs we wrote, and it's kind of actually they're pretty poignant and smart.
Do you think that people, including your best fans, would be surprised at how disciplined the band really was?
There is that. I think musicians, our peers knew how hard we worked. Our friends and family. But I think the general public goes, oh, those guys were just partying all the time. Matter of fact, when we got Matt Sorum, our second drummer, in the band in 1991, he thought somebody else, because he believed all that hype too, and he thought somebody else wrote our songs for Appetite for Destruction. And like, he couldn't believe, like, this group of guys wrote these songs. And yeah, we were very disciplined. Very, very disciplined, hard workers.
Despite all the tumult, all that was going on in your life, you did find time to go back to school and graduate, didn't you?
Well, that was another era. Yeah, so that was later on. I went through a lot before I went back to school. Getting sober was one of the big turning points in my life.
How old were you when you went back to college to graduate?
I was 31, 32. Yeah, I was gonna go out for my Seattle U. I had all these grand illusions. You look back and I played Little League baseball for a long time. One of my older brothers, was a star pitcher for his high school team, and they won the state championships in Washington. And he was a left-handed pitcher, and he got drafted. But he was washing one of my mom's windows, and back before it was shatterproof glass, and the glass broke and cut open his tendons on his left forearm. So, but he was like this. My musical inspiration and my sports inspiration. And he taught me how to throw junk curveballs and stuff when I was like 10. And so, of course, going back to college, I'm like, I could go out for the Seattle U Red Hawks baseball team and be the cagey 32-year-old rookie coming in now. 32-year-old rookie, Duff McKagan. But I went and looked at the baseball team. I wasn't that good. You're always better, I think, in your mind's your rearview mirror than you actually were. But
Duff, last thing. Writing a song versus writing a book. The processes. Which is more difficult?
When you have the right thing going, neither of them are difficult. When you have to force something through writing words or writing a song, maybe just stop and go another direction. If it's difficult to write a song, move on to something else. And same with writing columns, writing a book.
In other words, it's so easy.
R-
Right. There you go.
Once again, the author is Duff McKagan, and the book is called It's So Easy and Other Lies. Duff, a lot of luck with the book.
Great. Thank you so much.